Hello and welcome to the Smart Beauty Podcast. I'm your host, Viola Levy, beauty journalist and founder of copy-led branding agency, Smart Beauty Creative. We're here to create your brand voice and craft the story behind it. Hello, welcome to the Smart Beauty Podcast with me, your host, Viola Levy. And today I'm chatting to beauty journalist and copywriter Keisha Davis. Keisha has over 20 years of industry experience. She's worked with a number of hair and makeup brands. And as a journalist, her byline has appeared across a wide range of publications, including Glamour, Stylist, Hairdresser's Journal, The Independent, and Black Beauty and Hair. She also writes trend reports for Cosmetics Design Europe, looking at new innovations from the beauty industry. So it's safe to say she knows her stuff. She's actually a former colleague of mine. We were copywriters on a project together over lockdown. And she's just a great person to chat to because, like me, she has a plethora of press releases land in her inbox every day. So she has a real understanding of how brands should and shouldn't speak to journalists and what makes a great brand story, as well as plenty of other valuable insights when it comes to brand inclusivity and catering for the black hair market. So I hope you enjoy our chat.
Thank you so much for being on the podcast. So it'd be great first to get a little bit, tell us a little bit about your background, and has hair kind of been your specialty,
subject? Absolutely. I write about both hair and beauty, but I would say hair is my speciality, not just for the aesthetics side of things, but there's so much information and content you can get into regarding like cultural aspects, the history of hair, especially with black hair. Yeah, that's become my specialist area.
Yeah, like you say, there's just so much to talk about, and like the history of it is so fascinating. And how did that kind of, because obviously beauty journalism, like yourself, I've been a journalist for a while, and the world has sort of changed so much from when we first started. What would you say the main kind of changes have been for you?
Oh gosh, so everything has changed, hasn't it?
Definitely.
When I first started working for black hair, that was 2010. So social media, you know, we were still on the cusp of what we see today, really. So people still referred to magazines. That was their port of call for trends and information on new products, hairstyle inspiration. When we fast forward to today, especially with the younger generation, their first port of call is to go onto the internet, on social media, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, to find their hairstyle inspirations, to follow their favorite hair influencer that will, you know, give them the information that they need. So yeah, there's been a whole 360, and I would say I wouldn't say journalism is on its last legs, but I think it is a struggle to have the same impact that influencers have currently. So
definitely, I think people have shorter attention spans now, don't they?
So that too, and information is often presented in quite bite-sized elements as a result. And coming from our backgrounds, where, you know, I remember while working for black hair, we published every 6 weeks, so we were able to really research ideas and articles and interview people.
Yeah.
And I miss those days. As much as I love today's way of consuming content, I'm at heart quite a long form girl.
Me too.
Due to my background, yeah.
It's nice because it's that immersive experience, isn't it? It's really kind of getting to grips with a subject and interviewing various people and really kind of understanding, you know, the heart of what you're talking about. Whereas,
yeah. And it's, things just stick more, don't they, when you take the time to read something and research it and really consume it. Yeah, I mean, I will spend the whole day consuming content on YouTube and Instagram, and by tomorrow I wouldn't have remembered what I've consumed.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's quite concerning, really.
For sure. I mean, mm-hmm. I guess you could say that there are more kind of conversations happening now, and it's more democratized as opposed
that
to
is true.
A few magazines talking about it. I mean, I'm sure you've seen that within the black hair space, mm-hmm. that there's sort of more interesting conversations happening and more interesting brands kind of emerging as a result.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, that's true. These conversations have always happened away from the mainstream, you know, because we have magazines and publications and radio stations that are specifically focused on black people and the black experience.
Yeah.
But you're right, in terms of it being more accessible to all, these conversations, social media has changed that, which I think is a positive thing.
And do you think the way that brands talk about different hair types now has changed from when you first started out?
Yes, there has been a lot of pushback online over the last years, and I think people have brands have taken that on board, especially regarding how you refer to hair that is not straight and sleek.
Yes.
Yeah, we've seen, we no longer see things, well, we do see things like frizzy hair, but certain words that were associated with curly or coily hair were always spoken about in a derogatory manner.
Mm.
And we're no longer seeing that as much, I would say. And there is more of a all-inclusive approach to hair care that brands adopt. But I'm of the belief that hair, because our hair is so different, there isn't a one-size-fits-all approach to hair.
No.
So I'm usually quite sceptical when a brand launches and they're like, yes, it's for all hair types. So there's pluses and minuses to this kind of all-inclusive approach to hair care.
Yeah, exactly. Because they can say it's for all hair types, but it's like, really? Have you actually done your research?
Yeah.
Texture
hair
has its own specific requirements.
Exactly. But... which is almost the exact opposite of like European hair, you know? So I think they're doing this because they want to be all-inclusive and they want to tick that inclusivity box, but whether it actually works on hair types, that remains to be seen. And I think it can be quite deceptive to people that will just rush out and buy these products. Black people, I should, or women of black or textured hair, just go out and buy these products and just assume it works for everyone when it doesn't always.
Definitely. And I think brands are trying with that coding system. So it's like 4B, 2C. What do you think of that? Do you think that helps?
I think it helps, especially hairdressers. A lot of hairdressers I've spoken to aren't too keen on it, especially when it comes to Afro-textured hair, because our hair tends to have two or three types. You know, I also think people find it almost like, yeah, you're segmenting, or, you know, finer types, the type two, the type threes. I think hairdressers find it quite limiting. I know, for example, in my hair, I've got different types of textures. I find it useful, though, if, again, going back to hair products, and a brand releases a product line and they will say it's suitable for type three, type four hair, I'm like, perfect, that works for me. So I find it useful. But I know it's considered controversial in some parts.
Say it's hierarchical.
Yeah, that's true. Because, like, type fours is last. And you've got the silkier, wavier textures are type two. Those in between is type three. So I think it is quite hierarchical. But I think it has its uses.
Yeah, I guess they sort of like they have to find ways in order to kind of justify the claims and sort of say, well.
Exactly. And even when, like, on YouTube and I'm looking for hairstyle inspirations, especially, like, at the start of the natural hair revolution, say, 10, 15 years ago, that was just an easy way for me to find influencers with my hair type, was typing type 4 hairstyles. And there you go. So I think it has its uses.
Do you have any examples of brands that you think do target that those different hair types really well and can kind of cater to textured hair in a way that's effective?
The first one that springs to mind is Mielle, which is a black American owned brand, even though I think it's now owned by one of the conglomerates. But I love the fact that they have a vast range, so they not only cater to textured hair across the spectrum, But also within that, you have different hair needs, don't you? Some people have dry hair, some people have scalp issues, some people have breakage.
Yeah.
So within the textured hair sector, they've got subsections as well that address different hair types.
Yeah.
Hair issues, sorry.
Yeah.
And I think in terms of representation as well, criticism of the past regarding the natural hair movement was the focus was on those with type 3 curls, so really springletty, ringlet curls, and those with coarser textures weren't really represented. So I love when brands feature a variety of hair types in their marketing.
It's not a one size fits all approach. And as a journalist, what do you think are the best ways that brands can engage with you when it comes to sort of talking about this subject and talking about different hair types?
I think information is key, and I also think honing in on what makes your brand unique is paramount too, because there are so many now. When I think back to when I first started, or even when I was a child, I mean, when I was younger, we didn't really have hair products specifically designed for natural hair. But in the last 10, 15 years, the market has become somewhat saturated. So I think to stand out, you have to let me know what is different about your product. What need are you going to address that hasn't been addressed already?
Yeah.
So that could be ingredients, that could be techniques, showing me how the product works, imagery. Yeah, there are a number of things that that brands can do.
And do you think some brands kind of almost kind of act like they deserve a pat on the back for catering to different things?
Oh, yes. Yeah. And as I said earlier, it almost feels like a box ticking exercise. Look, we've got, and I find the same thing as with makeup as well. Like, we've got your extra shades. What you know, what are you complaining about?
Yeah.
And it almost feels like it's being done just because they want to prevent facing criticism online more than them genuinely wanting to engage with that particular sector. So, yeah, it does come across as quite disingenuous sometimes.
And also, why didn't you do it from the very beginning? Why are you actually doing it?
Exactly.
Now.
Exactly.
And do you have any examples of when you've kind of received sort of PR communication and you've thought that that brand, okay, they know what they're talking about, they've done it really well?
Not really, if I'm being honest.
No, that's fine. That's that just says it.
There probably is, but I just can't, at the top of my head, I can't think of any really. And it might come back to me during the duration of this conversation.
Are there any other kind of common mistakes that you see brands making when they talk about this subject or when they kind of contact you? So aside from the kind of, oh, look at us, look, aren't we great because we're doing this? Is there anything, are there any other examples of where you sort of see brands get sort of not quite getting it right?
I don't feel like brands really engage with me that much, to be honest. I receive generic press releases like everybody else, and that would be it. But I will say, actually, I'll take that back. This year I have attended a few launches for curly textured hair. The PR companies were not black owned, and I think they produced the events and the communications really well. And I think what helps is they have collaborated with black professionals within the hair and beauty space, whether that be hairdressers or influencers. So it's kind of almost taking a bit of the pressure off themselves, really. If they can just hire the relevant people to get them to communicate their messages, then they mitigate the risk from making mistakes.
And pay them properly as well.
And pay them properly, yeah.
For sure. Do you think that traditional PR is dead, or do you think that there's still a place for it? Because a lot of people are saying that there's no value in PR. Do you agree with that?
I don't think it's dead. And I think maybe, again, it comes back to our background. All right, first of all, I tend to learn about new launches online before I do via a PR person, to be honest. You know, brands just tend to, like, we're dropping, especially brands like Fenty, where I think they're quite keen on doing the surprise drops, and then you might get a PR sending a press release in a few days. However, again, going back to what we said at the start of this conversation, that I am quite an information junkie. So I like to have all the information documented in a piece of paper that I can file, and you just don't get that same information retention when you consume content on an Instagram post, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel there's still very much a need for traditional PR. Things like product launches as well, which I just spoke about earlier, where you can go and learn more about the brand, what went into creating it. You can get to know the people behind it in a more intimate way.
Definitely.
So I think there is still a need for PR, 100%. I would say to brands, just stay true to your nature. I'm not a huge fan of like box ticking, as I said earlier. Don't do things just because you feel you have to. Do it because you want to. And as a result, I think that's when people do it well.
Yeah.
You know?
It just comes across as disingenuous. And
yeah, exactly. Like, exactly.
And also, I think brands don't really, their teams don't really represent the communities they're trying to target.
Yeah.
So what you were saying earlier about working with influencers and partnerships, or even employing people.
Employing people, that would be
a novelty.
That would be a novelty, absolutely. Absolutely.
But I think it's good that kind of online sort of communities are kind of breaking, it's sort of breaking down this like monoculture that I think magazines had.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It really makes me happy when I see, especially younger journalists, black journalists, working in all kinds of titles, you know, your Vogues and your Elles and your Cosmos. And also we still have black interest magazines as well, like Black Beauty and Hair still going. I think Pride's still going. In America you have Essence and so forth. I think there is a need for both.
Yeah, so you don't think that maybe like all magazines should be catering to all hair types, or you still think there's a place for kind of magazines that focus on like Black Beauty and Hair, for example?
Oh yeah, 100% yeah. Think there is, because the danger, I think, with this new approach where we have, you know, a few black writers, or we write a few features a year, is you know, I'm black every day, every single day.
Yeah.
365 days of the year, so I can't switch on and off, and I want to learn about my hair, about my skin, about other issues concerning me as a black woman all the time, not just occasionally. So I think we will always be treated as a minority group. So we'll only be featured a minority of the times, or a few times a year, or, you know, we're never going to be front and center. So I 100% still feel there's a need for magazines specifically for black women, or for Asian women, or for other minority groups.
Do you think the same is true for beauty brands?
That's a good question, really. I think beauty I'm not as fussed about, as long as it's produced well. To be honest, I personally don't care who owns it. That said, I think I love the fact that black women particularly are entering the beauty industry as brand owners. I think it's really powerful. We know how lucrative the industry is. We know how much black women spend on beauty and hair in comparison to other racial groups. And it does irk me a bit that we are not benefiting financially from that. So I love the fact that black women are really showing up in the brand ownership space in such a bold way.
We worked together a while back on an audit for a company that we shall not name.
Yeah.
And that was basically just going through all of their content and finding problematic language. And
yes.
Looking back on that, how do you think do you think that's a good approach, that kind of retroactive approach? Do you think content creators are valuable, or what would be your reflections on that?
I think as a brand, if I was in their shoes, I probably would have done the same thing too.
Yeah.
Because we know how damaging it is if people come across content and it was written by your brand and it is derogatory. Mm-hmm. So I feel for them it was a valuable, they probably weighed it up. I'm like, it's better we pay someone or pay a few people than save us you know, the reputational damage it will do if we were to have problematic language out there. So I 100% get it.
Mm. Do you think more brands could benefit from hiring people like yourself to do audits and to make sure that their messaging is...
Exactly, 100%. And I'm here if anyone needs anyone looking for someone.
Me
and Viola made an amazing team. I really enjoyed working with you as well.
Likewise.
Actually, it was really fun. Yeah, we have to learn. We have, and I'm glad brands are taking note. They're listening to the audience, to consumers, and they are rectifying mistakes of the past. Because we didn't know. You know, there's language within the Black community. We used to call it, and I think we still do to some degree, problematic names and speak about our hair in derogatory manner. This is a re-education for us all, you know. I remember when I still wear my hair natural, but I tend to be a bit more experimental with it now. But I remember I would say at the height of the natural hair movement, which was maybe around 2012, 2013, around that time, and the amount of women that would come up to me, I love your hair, but I could never do my hair like that because my hair's different. How is your hair different? Oh, it's unruly, it's dry, it's tough, it's, you know.
Yeah.
And that is language that we have learned over time. I remember a friend of mine going to a salon, a Black hair salon, and a lady was combing her hair out, and she said to another hairdresser, can you do this hair? Hair's too tough, I can't deal with it. My friend was sitting there in the chair, felt totally embarrassed, humiliated.
Oh my
god. So this is an issue that's been going on for hundreds and hundreds of years, and I feel that many of us as Black women still aren't comfortable with our hair. We are quick to put it away or straighten it, relax it, or press it because we don't know how to deal with it. We haven't learned how to deal with it. So I really appreciate brands who are taking the time to encourage Black women to love their hair, to embrace their hair, no matter what the texture. And that goes back to what I was saying as well about the typing when the natural hair movement was at its peak. And it was all about loving your hair no matter what the texture. However, we were seeing representation, whether that be on the brand's social media feed or on their YouTube channel or on their product packaging. It was a very specific type. It was curly, it was coily, and that was seen as the acceptable look of the natural hair movement. So yeah, I really love brands that are like, nope, we are embracing of all textures. And you know, a brand that I think I'm really excited about, that I think are doing it really well, is Curl Kitchen. Have you heard of Curl Kitchen? It's the brand founded by Fleur East and her sister Kesha.
Yeah.
And I think they've just hit all the right notes with their launch. I think they launched maybe 2-3 months ago. I'm not even sure because time just means nothing to me at the moment.
Same.
Yeah. But from presenting, and obviously they're of mixed heritage, and they have the kind of curl type that I'm talking about that is almost exalted in the Black hair space. It's curly, well-defined curls, quite bouncy. But so they've started with their brand story, why they started their brand. They spoke about being raised in a dual heritage family. Their mother's hair texture is different to theirs, and so was their father's, obviously. So their parents didn't know what to do with their hair. So it's kind of been like a process of figuring it out themselves. But with their brand, they are, I think, very intentional about using models of all hair types. And I particularly love that there's a focus on women with type 4 hair, dark skin women with type 4 hair.
Yeah.
So I think they're doing, in terms of their marketing, I would definitely rate them highly for what they've done so far.
It's about that sort of inclusivity, not just sort of in general, but that curl, you know, looking at different curl patterns and including everyone, not just people that have a certain curl type.
Exactly.
And it sounds like what they're doing is really great. And just the way they're kind of speaking to their consumers, it's so important, isn't it, coming from an authentic place. Do you think a lot of brand founders, especially within the Black hair space, they're also compelled to be ambassadors?
I think you've got no choice in this day and age if you're going to put out a brand. And especially, a prime example was Beyoncé's launch of Sacred. Obviously, Beyoncé, global superstar, massive, huge fan base, especially Black women. before the internet, I guess, you could just put out a brand and put your face on the packaging and that would be it. People were hugely critical of her because, you know, she put out this brand, beautifully presented, gorgeous models of different hair textures, but we didn't see, and a lot of people were like, we haven't seen Beyonce using these products. How can you expect us to buy your products if you're not going to show us that? Yeah, so I think eventually, a couple of weeks into it, she did a quick, like, behind video. The video of her getting her hair washed and blow dried. So I think in this day and age, you have to, you know, black hair products are quite pricey when you compare to, say, your everyday brand that you might get in Superdrug or Boots. They're quite expensive, quite a big investment for people. And as I said, there are so many, you just don't know where to put your money.
No.
So people really have to show up. If you're thinking of launching a brand in the hair or beauty space, you really have to accept that you're probably, unless you're going to be like a, what's it called when you launch something but you don't put your name or face attached to it?
Just the face of it.
Unless you just want to be not even a silent partner, but launch something and not let everyone know that's you, then that's fine. But if you're going to put your name and face to it, you have to be
walking the walk.
Yeah, walking the walk. And that's why I think Rihanna's so popular, Fenty's so popular, because you really get a feel of Rihanna's involvement in the brand. You can tell that she really enjoys it and loves it. When she launched her hair products, she was breaking down the ingredients. She just seemed so passionate about it. And I feel that's a huge reason why her brand is so successful.
Yeah, what she's done in the beauty space is just amazing. Would you
agree? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I love her. I'm a real Rihanna fan.
Same. And I think the fact that when she launched Fenty and people were queuing around the block of, like, Harvey Nichols
to
get the darker shades, it shows that there is a market for these shades.
Yeah, absolutely.
On the table by
And what brands consider the darker shade, you know, we know women, men that are so much darker. So I think she really hit the nail on the head with that. And as we've seen, other brands have started to follow that now. So yeah,
it's great that she kind of trailblazed that.
Yeah, 100%.
Talking just more in general about when you receive like press releases, because obviously I'm sure you've received hundreds over the years, as I have.
Yeah.
And we're both used to kind of reading the same brand stories.
Yeah.
there's a lot of cliches in our industry. Yeah. What makes a good sort of brand story, in your opinion, when you receive a press release? What kind of makes you sit up and go, oh, that's interesting, I think I might want to learn more about that?
Yeah, I just think you just have to be honest, really. And like you said, avoid the cliches and just be honest. Going back again, using Fleur and Kesha as an example, I just found that quite fascinating, the fact that, you know, there's these two girls of different heritage, of dual heritage, whose parents had never experienced having to look after this particular hair type because they don't have it. So they were left to kind of to figure it out themselves. I just feel you need to be honest with your story to gain true connection. I feel people know, not just people, us as journalists, but anyone in the general public, they know when they're being lied to, when stories aren't necessarily true, but you're just saying that because you know you'll receive, you know, maximum attention, or people will sympathize with you. I just feel be honest, and not everyone's going to have a compelling story. That's just the way it is. And to be honest, I'm trying to think, am I more, I love a good story, but ultimately it's the product that's going to speak for itself.
Yeah,
really.
But the story helps kind of,
the story helps to bring that product to life and create community and brand fans. But ultimately, is the product good? And I feel we might now be entering a space where there's more emphasis on the story rather than the
That's
product.
Interesting.
Yeah.
One should never overshadow the other. I think it's
because, absolutely,
more people are sort of shopping online now. There's no kind of try before you buy element.
Yeah,
and they're having to kind of just put their faith that something's gonna work.
to stick.
I think they just have to kind of buy into this story because they've got no other
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that it's becoming like the X Factor. You know, with the X Factor, it used to be the story took precedent over the actual talent.
It's like, you're flying without wings.
Yeah, exactly. I just hope we're not entering that space where it's just like, oh, because I often see that on LinkedIn especially, and I agree how a brand story is really, really paramount, but ultimately is your product good? It's how you tell it.
And being authentic and not
resorting
to cliches, because I'm sure we both see a lot.
And absolutely. But I do love I love stories regardless, and I think that's my favourite element of working with independent brands, especially.
Me too.
Is finding out what's your story, what is your impetus for doing this, you know, and putting that out there. That is my favourite thing.
Yeah, I'm sure that's why you became a journalist, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And lastly. Well, this is what I'm just really nosy. Kind of, what are your favourite brands in general? Like, having been, you know, working in the beauty industry for many years, and you've seen a lot of brands and products. Like, what are your kind of favourite ones?
What, hair or beauty or
anything? Can be either.
Oh, you've put me on the spot. Oh my gosh, I've got so many.
What's and I always have. Moment?
I'm gonna look in my beauty thing actually while you're here. As I said earlier, I love Mayelle. I love her story, actually. And her story was, I think she had a young daughter who struggled with some kind of scalp ailment, and she was concocting these, you know, these formulations in their house, in their kitchen, and sampling them in a local community, and it just grew and grew. So I love not only her story, but her products are amazing.
Where is she from? Now,
she's based in the States. I can't remember what state.
They get all the good beauty brands.
They get all the beauty, yeah. And I just love how she's made natural hair products quite accessible. Like I said, with natural hair products, they tend to be quite small, but she has different collections within the Mayelle banner. But it's worth saying as well, she has had a lot of investment, so she's been able to do that. But and I would love to see that as well, is brands, these independent brands, being given the cash injection they require just to take their brand up to the next level.
Definitely.
So that's one. Oh my gosh, Fenty. I do love a Fenty.
Yeah,
I haven't tried the hair products, funny enough, but
no, me neither.
I mean, yeah, the beauty products, the makeup products, whenever I go into Boots, I'm always having a nose. I love everything about it. The product quality is stellar. As you said, there's a wide variety of shade colours and tones to suit all complexions. I love the marketing. I absolutely loved when she launched the hair products and all those really bright pastel-y colours. It just looked like so much fun.
Yeah.
And I was like, I wish I was part of your marketing team. It just looks like such a fun gig.
The makeup should be fun, right?
Makeup should be fun. It should be absolutely fun. So I love them as well. Did you say three?
It can be three or can as many as you want.
As many as well. Okay, who else? Oh my gosh, I'm going to be kicking myself afterwards.
I always get the same when people ask me, so I don't know why I ask that. But I always just think, what's in my bathroom at the moment? Or what
am I at the moment? Makeup, I also love an oldie but goodie, Bobbi Brown. I'm a faithful Bobbi Brown. And to be honest, foundation-wise, I do chop and change, but I always go back to one particular, the Weightless Foundation. Never lets me down. And even though, as we mentioned earlier, Rihanna was really... Fenty Beauty was key in pioneering this whole 40-plus shade range. It has to be said, Bobbi Brown was doing a really wide variety of shades as well. Maybe not as dark and deep as Fenty, but I think they were really, really doing that as well. But maybe not screaming and shouting about it as much as other brands. So I love their foundations, bronzers, skincare as well. They do really nice skincare products. It's a very reliable brand that I can go to time and time again, and I know what I'm getting for my money.
Yeah, I love her rouge for lips and cheeks. That's one of my
favorites. Yeah, there's multifunctional products as well. There's a lot of things that Bobbi Brown pioneered, but I don't think they get the credit for it.
No, I think when I first started out, it was MAC, Bobbi Brown, and Becca.
Yeah. And what's the other one? Becca. Oh, yeah, what happened to Becca?
Yeah, they're sadly no more, I believe. But yeah, they were the only brands that really did those diverse shade ranges.
Shades, yeah. Absolutely.
So yeah, there's something to be said for that. Have you tried Bobbi Brown's new range, the Jones Road?
I've tried a balm. I think it's a beauty. It's a balm that you put on your cheeks, and I think again it's multifunctional. You can use it on your lips. I liked it. I didn't love it because there wasn't much colour playoff.
Yeah.
For me, so I have to probably try out some of our other products. Yeah.
Hmm. Well, thank you so much for chatting to me, Keisha. It's been so lovely catching up, and I hope we get to work together again soon.
Yes, me too. Thank you so much, Viola, for having me. It's been lots of fun.
No, thank you. And it's been great hearing all of your insights and like learning a bit more about kind of your history in the beauty industry. And I think a lot of brand founders listening to this will get a lot out of it and sort of get some
useful, I hope so.
Useful intel.
Absolutely, I hope so. It's been lots of fun and very insightful as well, because when we work together, we don't really get to have these conversations. So it's been good to hear your insights too.
A huge thank you to Keisha for being on the podcast. I hope you enjoyed our chat. And apologies if the sound sounded a bit uneven. It was a new platform that I'm trialing, but my technical person, i.e. me, will be taking a look into it. So hopefully next time it will be a better listening experience. Also, Keisha and I will be offering a new service through Smart Beauty Creative for brands looking to audit their content and copy. If you would like to book a call, then please email hello@smartbeautycreative.com and we can discuss further how Keisha and I can help you with your language and messaging to make it more engaging to a diverse audience. So yes, please do get in touch if you would like to work with Keisha and I. I hope you enjoyed that episode. All links will be in the show notes, and feel free to visit smartbeautycreative.com or visit us over on Instagram to find out more about what we do. And if you enjoyed listening, please don't forget to rate and review Smart Beauty on iTunes, as it helps people find us. See you next time.